Shrink Wrap Radio number 540, Orienting Through Dreams in These Dark Times, with Jungian analyst Monica Wickman.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
On today's show, I'll be speaking again with Jungian analyst Monica Wickman, PhD. This will be her sixth time on Shrink Wrap Radio, and we'll be discussing her recent thinking about the role of dreams in these dark times. For more information about Monica Wickman, please see our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. Monica Wickman, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thanks, Dr. Dave.
Well, it's great to have you back. I was checking and I saw that this is the sixth time that you've been on Shrink Wrap Radio.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I was hoping maybe this time we could really drop into a conversation around these times and dream images and see together what we come up with.
Yeah.
collaborative.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. And I guess we can start out by observing that I think we're probably in agreement that we appear to have entered very dark times, not only for this country, but perhaps for the whole world.
Yes, I so agree. And I think the resonance of most people really getting this now, it's not about right or left or the have or have not. I think everybody's beginning to get it. It's that whole crisis opportunity signature that comes out of the Chinese language. We're really in crisis and opportunity.
Right.
And the opportunity to encounter the shadow and to grow and to see what can transform.
Yeah, and as a Jungian analyst, one of the channels for knowing that you tend to trust, and mm-hmm. I do too, is dreaming or dreams. And I understand that you've personally had some dreams that relate to what's going on.
Yes, I have, and I know others have. And I was hoping by us dropping in with the discussion about some dreams and dream images that we'd get a chance to stir people's curiosity and imaginings about their own dreams and where they receive guidance and where they receive some experience of the bigger transcendent psyche. Everybody has their own channels they dial it in on. And to consider the dreams together today, right before the inauguration, just seemed like a really good idea. I'm glad that you prevailed with the technology and here we are.
We've just gone through about an hour of struggling with the technology. And so I'm glad that we didn't have to postpone this. And so, I have no personal dreams to share, but I'm here to listen to yours and any others that you might want to bring into the conversation.
Okay, sure. And anything that comes up for you with the symbols or things that come to mind for you, I thought, dropping into the discussion could be sweet.
Yeah, great.
When we take a look at Jung's life, of course, he had that one dream where he went out on a hunt and had the help of 50,000-year-old man, a kind of an image of the original human being, first human being, who helped him in the hunt. And they brought back this big mastodon-like creature, which basically was a boatload of meat for the culture that would continue to have a lot to eat into the future. And I know that many people are touched by Jung's life and his work, as I am. And the sense that his life did connect with something that brought back a huge feast. And a major part of what his work gave us is the dream window, the window to tuning in to what the dream processes are and guiding spirits and being able to pay attention to symbols and images and ponder them and see what's awakening with us.
Right. And I seem to recall that Jung had one or two very important big dreams that foreshadowed the bloodshed that was about to overtake Europe in World War I, right?
Yes, yes. Well, it's a great place for us to go, starting with the Red Book, and in 1913, how he ends up with visions and dreams that are showing his psyche deeply connected inside and out to the catastrophic energy that was constellating at the time. And then the whole Red Book is his offering to, his personal offering of doing really deep work in the interior realm in order to create an offering also that gives something back to the collective. It's like the introversion of war. He, you know, taking the energy on the inside and working so deeply, then he could feel as it was complete over his lifetime that he really gave something to the collective unconscious for the good of the world. And so all of us tending our dreams are working on something similar, really, because when we work a piece of it on the inside, we lessen the tension also on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
A while back, I had a dream that had a piece of that in it, and it was years ago, but I it comes to mind now as we dive into this. And in the dream, one piece of it was there was a collective storm of evil that was growing, and I was in a little shed in the dream with my animals, my horses, and a pile of grain, and I was saying a little prayer in the back of this little shed with my animals. I was saying that as the storm came by, that I hoped that I would be able to be granted the grace to pull out of this collective storm pieces of my own shadow to help the storm of collective evil to lessen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
so that's an important observation, because I guess we will mention the name that I would rather not mention of Donald Trump. And he really attracts, I mean, I think there's some objective reality to his awfulness, but at the same time, he certainly draws our shadow projections mightily, right? And so what you're suggesting is that it's important for us to become aware of and own our piece of that, our projections onto him.
Yeah, very much. And to get a mythic imagination, too, about what we're watching on the world stage so that we can get some pieces that are also our own that we can work with. And I know we can see many people are speaking to this these days, of course, and we need to be about, you know, finding the psychopathic energy on the inside as well and not hand it off out of fear or projection or whatever may happen, not to just leave it out on some world stage, but to find it on the inside.
Well,
when we do this, we help the Tao, we help the collective reality.
Well, when you say bring a mythic imagination to it, can you give us an example of how you might do that in this moment?
Yes. Maybe we can get into two dreams that I'm thinking of. Some of these dreams that I'll share today are mine, and some are from other people who've generously shared them. This dream came to me before the election. It was in August. And I think I'll just say, as we enter this dream piece, that this isn't a normal election, clearly, and everybody on the right and the left knows this, and it's not a conversation about right versus left anymore. We're way beyond that as a collective, which is a good thing, a really good thing, and we need to be. So this dream, I think, speaks to the mythic imagination behind what we're watching in the United States, and I think, unfortunately, it's at large. So in the dream, I'm standing in the California coast area, and it's August when I'm dreaming this dream. And in the dream, I'm looking east, and I'm seeing that I'm looking east in the fall, in the autumn. And I see that there are somehow men who are tied to something that they're doing. They're working on something, and in so doing, their energy has literally pried open the sky. And I can see the sky in the east is opening. It's kind of like a little teeth that open. And out of this little hole comes this giant demonic beast. And this beast has an appetite for more, 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 and it doesn't know how to stop. And it is literally turned itself loose on the world. It jumps through, and then into the world it goes. So, and that was the dream.
That's reminding me of King Midas, of that insatiable hunger to devour what's out there, right? And own it.
Oh, it's a perfect myth to bring in, the perfect association, because you're right, King Midas, part of his touch is that he turns everything to gold and it becomes a curse. And it's the wrong kind of gold. It's interesting you'd go to that because that has an alchemical, mythical quality. And I know listeners today with us will be wanting to try to listen in with symbolic ears to the things we're saying. It's like learning symbolic listening.
Yeah,
so we,
good.
So when you say King Midas and gold, you know, the power of earthly gold versus, you know, gold of the soul and gold of something that gets constituted that's of utmost value and that's eternal for every human being. It's a different gold. And Midas gets caught in that. Just as we're watching now, here it is in January, right before the inauguration, we're watching the cabinet get picked. That's the richest cabinet in history. And this whole concept around more and where are the values that are going on collectively.
Yeah.
Is one of the things we're wondering about. Yeah.
And interestingly, he's, in the material sense for his cabinet, he's leaned very strongly towards other gold people, other gold-hungry, materialist, mm-hmm. capitalist people.
Yeah, and then the question about human care comes in really strongly right now when we watch him thinking without a thought that they can just take away Obamacare and how many millions of people wouldn't have insurance.
Yeah.
You know, where's the net under the plan that's going to catch human beings, as we have a government of business? If it's going to become a giant business, is there mm-hmm. going to be any care for the human element as we watch it unfold?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the mythic imagination lets us take a look at, well, what has turned itself loose here? What is the consciousness that's getting created doing so that the collective unconscious then ends up letting something loose? This is a huge force that, you know, is now gaining momentum. And,
I think of the Lord of the Rings too, and the was it Mordor? This collective place of evil.
And yeah, I'm glad you bring that in because it's true that we have so many important books and films that have been written that carry the mythic imagination. And isn't Tolkien timely, Dr. Dave? Isn't he just amazing for us being able to see that grinding evil that's after more that creates the demonic force that goes against nature.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been seeing that in The Lord of the Rings. It's amazing. I've heard people call Trump Sauron playing with it. I don't really want to give him that much power. I don't think he's got enough of something that would go with that. But nonetheless, staying with the animal that turns itself, it's not even an animal, really. In the dream, you know, it looked a bit like a giant, huge, hungry, devouring snout that just would go, go, go. Mm. And it reminded me of a myth from Ireland and the myths of all times that have been looking at these archaic creations. And in this myth, it's the myth of Queen Maeve. And Queen Maeve and her lovers, your listeners could go to the book by Sylvia Pereira called Queen Maeve and Her Lovers to find this myth if they'd like to look it up.
Okay.
But on the western slope of Ireland, it's Sligo area, there is a place in the mountain there above Ben Bolben that is the track between the world's mythic place for the Celtic imagination. And there's a cave on the far side of this certain turn in the stone there. There's a beautiful place where they see that the stone turns between the worlds. It's a lovely way of feeling the imagination in landscape. So anyway, in the myth, Queen Maeve has been with one of her consorts, one of her many lovers. She's been in this cave making love on the side of the mountain there. And human beings, the realm of human beings in the valley below, have gotten into quite a ruckus because all of these pigs have completely run amok and they've gone into so much appetite. They've eaten up everything and there's no stopping them. And they've devoured nature and they're devouring more and more and they're devouring everything. And the human beings cry out because they don't know how to stop it. And they get Queen Maeve's attention in the cave and she comes on down from her cave walking arm in arm with her lover. And as she walks on down into the valley, she interestingly begins numbering the pigs, calling them by number. And as they feel her presence and her numbering capacity, they line up behind her. They then are organizing themselves around her consciousness. And so they line up behind her. And in the story, one of them, which doesn't want to do that at all, jumps over her head. She grabs its little skin off of it shamanically. She ends up holding its skin as it leaps and then falls naked next to her, and then does submit and surrender to her divine cosmic ordering. And then all of them line up. They remember where their appetite, you know, is supposed to come into balance with the Tao, and harmony is returned. Now, it's a beautiful myth. Part of what it's doing is bringing up these images out of the unconscious of the archetypal feminine that has the capacity to bring us back into alignment with cosmic ordering and cosmic reorganization around center. So there are images of this kind of feminine in many cultures. The Navajo have Hozo, H-O-H-Z-O. She has a similar function. It's remarkable. And in Egypt, there's Maat, M-A-A-T. And they literally help human beings and these wild instinctual things that become demonic, helps them course correct and remember a different way.
Let me run one idea by you from the Maeve story that you just shared with us. I'm wondering if there's something in there that's saying the act of naming, the act of identifying, becoming conscious of, you know, and I'm trying to apply that in our current situation because many of us are struggling with, do I put my head in the sand like an ostrich and just stop watching the news, stop reading the newspaper because it's all so upsetting, or do I need to somehow stand up and name the things that I see going on? Would that apply? Is that a fair thing to pull out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely it does. So that would bring me to the dream I had right after the inauguration. If you want, we can go to that. And we can come back to this one of the mythic beast because it's kind of prevailing winds that image has quite illustrated it. But I think it's really true. Where do each individual sit as each individual is trying to process what's happening and find center again? So the dream I had was not the night of the election, but the next night after Hillary had given her concession speech. And the dream was that I could see the body of the world, and the world laid out as if it was a body. And it was clear there was an infection in the body of the world, and that many people were called to have to be figuring out what to do with this, how to relate to the body of the world and the infection going on. And in the images, what was shown was that each person had their own offering bowl. And and in the dream, people were called to find their own inner compass that would tell them where to stand, how far or close in relation to what was going on in the body of the world. And then to, interestingly, empty their bowl, which is the whole meditation in itself. And then with one's own little offering bowl, as a prayer for the soul of the world, find where one's guiding star is. And realign with it. Get the bowl and the star and your being to realign. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, that created a new alignment that gave something healing to the body of the world and to the infection going on in the body of the world. Mm-hmm. Now, I know these are symbols and images. And so for us to tune in and hear them, you know, everyone has their own vessel of consciousness and their own care for their own lives, their own beings, and the world. And everyone is getting quite activated. Most people, as you just said, are getting so activated that we get called into the infection. You know, like we get infected by the news, and so much so that we're just part of the sickness. We can't feel, see the stress, the trauma body. Mm-hmm. We want to say has been up. Many of us have been experiencing that. I think it's incredibly human and so understandable. But the dream, I think, is trying to give us a deeper wisdom about be careful, because to get too caught in the infection doesn't work. Yeah. And stand too far back, fall asleep, doesn't give the world anything. So
there's an opportunity here for us to get to realign with our deepest, to get in touch with our deepest ideals and wisdom, and to hold to that.
Yes. Dr. Dave, that's beautiful. It really puts it down into words that we really can hold on to. If we think of the bowl aligning with the star, how is the vessel of one's little self aligning with something, a light that's more eternal? That each person has their own wisdom, their own connection, their own way of centering, the own way that this comes through, and are called to rise to these times in such different ways.
And it's interesting that it's an offering bowl, right? Mm-hmm. In your dream, an offering bowl. So, you know, and it was emptied out at first, right?
Yeah.
So, which suggests to me that there's something to clear out to as part of the alignment. You kind of have to start fresh in a way.
Oh, that's so right. And I think that's why, you know, the dream wisdom is showing us that there is the infection, and we're all aware of it, and to be careful with it, find our individual vessels, our own feeling core, our own soul, our own realignment, and then to go ahead and make whatever offering we're moved to make authentically from it was inside each person, everyone's called differently to respond to what's happening in the world now.
Yes.
It's interesting about emptying, because as we know with Buddhism, emptying is really everything. And that's also true when you look at Jung's work. He speaks about your inner emptiness conceals just as great a fullness if only you'll allow it to penetrate you.
Hmm.
So the meditation on emptiness, especially right now with the bombardment of the so muchness, where do we even find a moment to empty out and to let go of concepts, let go of, you know, headlines, you know, find a way for sacred emptiness. Yeah, and then reorient with sacred emptiness. Especially, I think, too, that really links with this image that we were just discussing about the demonic that wants more and more and more, because more and more and more appetite just fills itself. It's filling an emptiness. And so how can we hold emptiness in ourselves and go, as Jung would say, more after the religious function that would help us find that great fullness that's in the soul, that's not the collective ways that emptiness is filled meaninglessly.
And of course, another way that we can tap into the collective is to look at what's being expressed in film. And I raise that because before we got on here, you had asked me if I had seen, I think you asked me about three films. I had seen two of the three, and the one that's coming to mind right now is Arrival, where beings from another place in outer space arrive. And so I'm wondering, what sense did you make of that? It was fairly puzzling to me in some ways. What sense did you make of it in terms of the darkness that we're talking about now?
Well, I felt so moved and do feel so moved by that film in so many ways. I do think it's the collective dream right now, like a perfect antidote in a lot of ways. So if we go into some of what happens in the film, I think it'd be fun. And for, you know, viewers to think about how they're touched by the film and what symbols and experiences in it touch them.
Yeah.
So you're right that the heptapods, they come from another dimension, and they end up, you know, on planet Earth. And planet Earth, of course, is just like it is, with all its warring factions and its different countries that want to do different things to attack and defend, and all that kind of psychological armor of every country is portrayed in the film. And what are they going to do to get rid of the invaders, you know, the other as dangerous to be killed off? And over time, as this interpreter begins working with it, of course, we find that she ends up in transcendent consciousness. She's no longer locked in time space. They initiate her consciousness into something much larger. It takes quite a while, as you can see in the film, but what it does is it takes us as viewers into that higher consciousness to a real potential to experience something of it, touch the hem of it, the garment of it. Do you remember her hands? Do you remember her hands when she's playing with linear equations, the linear sentences, and she plays with it, and then suddenly it becomes a circle, don't know if you remember that part.
I don't know, but you know, as you're speaking, it's starting to come back. My memory for films is not good sometimes. I have difficulty remembering the film I saw, you know, just a few days ago. especially the titles. But as I heard you speaking, you know, talking just now, I remember how they brought all of these armaments. You know, okay, we're gonna blow up their vehicle. Yeah. And all these different kinds of weapons, you know, everything that we have, we're going to bring it against this stuff, and it's not very effective.
Well, it's great that you bring that in, because that military industrialized complex that we got from, you know, Eisenhower's languaging, we are so entrenched in that, and it was in Tolkien, that's what he was looking at, wasn't he? The whole military industrialized complex that just keeps growing more, as if this defense psychology and armament is getting us anywhere as cultures, you know. And more armament, and this is just, you know, obviously we are so aware that it's nuts, and it's worldwide not working.
Yeah.
So you're right, in the film, they're portraying it again. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to get, you know, every country's going to work on blowing it up as if something like that's going to defend anybody, and of course then it becomes countries are going to blow each other up in the process.
In the movie, it's the thing that is kind of the solution is communication. It's a linguist that they have to bring in, and so it's communication and it's empathy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful. Do you remember her fingers in the film and their hands, if we can call them hands, the way that they commune? There's an encounter and a communion with other that begins, that pulls her consciousness into a higher consciousness. And she has compassion and a felt sense. She can feel into their dimensionality, and her whole sense of herself and her life is completely reconfigured in the contact. Suddenly, the linearity of her life, for this whole sentence, you know, like birth, we're born, and then we die, her hands are taken to that equation and moves it into the circle of life and the circle of totality of the life. And suddenly, birth and death and all that happens, she can see past and she can see future. She can be the future looking past. She can be the past looking forward. She's in a transcendent above looking at both.
Yeah.
So we're out of the space continuum. That's so beautiful, isn't it? And then the epiphany that she has the capacity, in seeing the suffering of her life and what her life would be doing, she has the capacity to say yes to the whole of it, to say yes to the whole of life, given its whole totality. And so there's an incarnational energy that she gets from the contact for her own being. Yeah, and then also all the cultures that end up, as my friend Robin Van Lovensel said after she saw it, she said it's like the Tower of Babel, but finally they solve it, and it's a heart language. Suddenly it's the universal language of the heart, a transcendent heart, that all the governments of all the worlds then get to tune in on, and then we'd be unified. So it's an image of it, and it's a felt image of a possibility for us beyond these factions and warring, bizarre ways that defense psychology operates. There's a higher transcendent piece that, when I say higher, I also mean it's as base as everything too, because it's the commonality of all human beings being one, regardless of which country and culture and have and have not. I think the darkness going on in our world is so big that we're getting more felt sense of this. We're getting much more felt sense of this. Many things are picking that reality up. I'm sure you've seen things on the internet that are doing that, little video clips and such that people are doing, with going way past handing the power over to politics. It's back in the hands of individuals reaching out across culture, and across race and color, and across have and have not. Suddenly, the elemental of what it means to be human is coming in, potentially shining more, as hatred in the shadows.
Another film that you mentioned was Avatar, which I did see, and that was just such a wonderful film, at least the first half. But then, in a way, it kind of ruins it, because it's, you know, there's this wonderful world, a dream that the heroic soldier guy discovers this feminine presence and this very feminine world and magical, and it's wonderful. And then the army people have to come in and have a big fight, which sort of, in a way, ruined the film in the same way that it ruins life in reality.
So well said. It's also kind of a boring theme, isn't it? You know, the military-industrialized complex yet again and another.
Yeah. You're right. It gets boring at that point. You could get up and leave the theater. And if I watch it, I think, you know, we can watch it on TV, Netflix, and so on. And I definitely start to tune out at that part.
Well, you know, I really appreciate what you're bringing in because, you know, we are bombarded with the psychic reality that the military-industrialized complex versus nature, subtle body and soul, these things are doing what they're doing. And how's the new thing going to come in that helps it transform? How's the new thing going to come in that helps it transform? And I think if we go back to Avatar and really James Cameron, I really think he gave us something also really, really important in this. Many things really. And I know we can feel in all that beautiful subtle body imagery that he has the soul of India right at his fingertips. And he sees through, you know, generations and thousands of years lineages of shamanism also that know an alchemy in a yoga work alchemy, that sees the world as that avatar world of the subtle body, that it actually is a transcendent reality that's in the psyche and psychoid that many people are getting initiated into. That is waking up and human beings in a new way right now, at the same time as this weird military-industrialized complex keeps forging itself. But one of the things of the film, I think, so important is that image of AWOP, the world tree. Do you remember the world tree? The beauty around the world tree.
I'm just now reflecting on the irony, or looking at it in a mythic way. His wife makes this extremely powerful movie about a bomb guy in the war, right? You know the movie I'm talking about, where the guy has to get in this big heavy suit, and you know he's risking getting blown up, and how interestingly paradoxical that the man makes this wonderful feminine thing over here and the woman makes this scary Middle East film.
Good point. It's amazing, isn't it, through film, what people can make us pay attention to, like to take a theme like that and make us have to pay attention as a viewer. Someone was mentioning to me yesterday, Manchester by the Sea, I haven't seen it yet, but that it makes you pay attention to a whole story where nothing ever transforms. So the mythic imagination in film really does get our attention, and dreams are parallel in that. They come up also to help us, you know, pay attention. The question is, where is the new coming in? A friend of mine, Jacqueline West, was saying this the other day, too, about the Star Wars film. When she went to see that film, the recent one, she was like, well, that's all the same thing. We're just doing the same thing over again.
Right.
So where does the new end up coming in? So that's where Arrival, I think, really comes in. Because Arrival, I think honestly, to give, you know, Cameron enough, you know, honoring of what he's done, like Tolkien has to picture it, James Cameron has to picture it, and more we'll start to look for, okay, well, where's the new coming in? In Arrival, literally, it's just like the depths of the psyche. It is that there is encounter with other that does change us, and it does open consciousness, and it does grow human consciousness out of this archaic way that it is holding reality. And in that contact with a higher consciousness, Jung would say, of course, that the religious instinctual parts of the soul wake up and find where human beings find their true place. And greed and like the demonic pig that might come in to, I can't say pig, that's not the right word, we wouldn't want to pin that on an owl, but something demonic that comes in that just wants more and more and more, like a greed spirit in the world that would devour the beauty of the natural world and harm human beings. That whole spirit, you know, it has a chance to come into contact. We come into something as the psyche tries to help us work with this and heal it. We come into something that realigns us, like that piece has made. Something touches us that's going to help us create an antidote. We're going to need to create an antidote. And that's the new. The new is we have contact with levels of the psyche and psychoid that do help us create something new in the face of this. And it's coming in from everywhere.
You said... me, just a brief note when we were contemplating this, and you mentioned Max Zeller, who was the founder of the Los Angeles Jung Institute, and I guess one of the one of the primordial Jungians in America, I guess, is how I would describe him. And but I have no idea what you were getting at in referencing him and how that applies to these dark times.
Yeah. His daughter, Jacqueline Zeller-Levine, is in New Mexico and heads the training program there. And this is her father's dream. It would be great to mention it, and then I'll mention another dream that came my way that's tied to it. Because I think you're really pointing at the heart of this conversation together by having us get to this dream. So this is toward the end of the 1940s. Jung had a really interesting conversation with Max Zeller, who told him about a recurrent dream that he'd been having. And in the dream, he saw unaccountable numbers of people of every race and culture working on what appeared to be the foundation of an immense temple. So again, it's an unaccountable number of people of every race and culture working on what appeared to be the foundation of a vast, immense temple. And as far as he could see, all the way to the horizon, swarms of people appeared to be raising an endless number of great stone pillars. In fact, Zeller himself was one of those engaged in this huge task within his dream. And when he asked Jung if he knew the meaning of the dream, Jung responded that the great temple was the new spirituality that was coming into being, and that unaccountable numbers of people were already actively involved in its construction. Zeller asked Jung, too, how he knew this to be so, and Jung responded that many of his clients reported that they were having similar dreams. Zeller then asked Jung how long he thought it would take, you know, to create this new temple of spiritual awakening, and Jung said, 300 years, and with a twinkle in his eye. 300 years, however long it's taking, the fact that many people in many different walks of life would be part of the new construction. This is definitely the beauty of what Jung talked about as big dreams. When Jung visited in Africa, the Ilongi tribe, they talked to him about the fact that they made a differentiation between smaller dreams and big dreams, and big dreams which a person is dreaming for the good of oneself and the collective. It's clear that the collective is in view and the collective situation is in view, and it's really working on the healing of the world. So Max's dream certainly touches that really this would then tell us that there's a new spiritual complex, a new awakening in human consciousness that's trying to come in, that many people are literally working on it. Now, I had a dream similarly, which I was going to mention. I think it fits with Max's dream. My partner Tom Elter told me about to go back and look at Max's dream after I had this dream. So in this dream, I've been, you know, in the angst of what's going on in the world and trying to find my way, how to empty my bowl, how to realign with my star, how to get myself together to have something to offer, you know, the prayer for the world right now. Yeah. Working on that myself. And then this dream came. And the dream was that I could see to the left this configuration that was getting built. And it was like a cosmic highway for our planet. And it was a possibility of a turn to the left that was getting constructed. And I could see to the sky. It had an angle disc-like and at an angle. And it went arcing over to the left. Like if you saw a giant freeway interchange the planet could take. This was a turn to the left. And the part that was interesting, Dr. Dave, was that there were hands from both realms working on this. There were human hands that were working on it, and there were hands from the invisible world that were working on it. And it was showing that every single person who was doing anything of their own inner work right now was adding to this long-time construction of the new possibility of this where this turn would take us. So I think Max's dream and that symbol speak that we're involved in something, certainly the darkest of times. We're in a giant negretto on our planet. And are we going to find where the new is coming in and help something new get constructed? This is the creative question we're all involved in now, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, on the news, of course, on what's called the news, they make their money by scaring us, right? That's their bread and butter, is to show us just awful stuff, and that makes people consume the news, and it becomes habitual, actually, to where we feel like, oh, I haven't watched the news today. And what doesn't get shown, but that you can find as you troll through the internet, which has connected us all just to an amazing degree, and you can find all these wonderful things that people are doing, these fantastic artistic creations, athletic capabilities just to be able to show off on YouTube, amazing stuff that people are doing, spiritual activities.
Yes. I'm so glad you mentioned this, because this is, I think, when we get beyond the infection and the trauma body and getting caught in news and filling our emptiness in the wrong way. When we empty out and then really take a look more at life itself and where life's coming in, there's a tremendous amount of creativity coming in right now, isn't there? And it's not through government, and it's not through politics, and it's not through the press, it's not through media. This is where we're so glad that we have the internet. It is the connectivity, and anyone can post. Anyone can create, generate, post, and connect with each other.
Yeah.
And all kinds of fresh ways, Do you remember in Obama's exit speech where he spoke to many things in a very elegant way, but one of the things that he said that was so touching was about how human beings had to get out of working with difference. A difference of color and all kinds of difference now. He was saying you have to get out of doing that through PC, through political correctness attitudes, that they don't work. And it really was going to require the human heart. It was going to require the human heart to be the one doing it. It's so beautiful. And the creativity of human hearts doing that right now, stepping out of mainstream communication and finding ways within and in relation to each other, to welcome otherness and the shadow. And also, the creativity coming in is shocking. I was going to show one image, if it's okay. There's a woman artist in Santa Fe, Deanne Jameson, whose work really shows what I would think of as the event horizon during these dark times. And she feels them deeply. She, you know, like many artists, she's busy, you know, creating as things are coming along. So I was going to show this one image. It's so touching because it does feel like the event horizon and the possibility of new creation. So hopefully,
okay,
we'll be able to be seen.
I will go to full screen here, which is an option that I have.
Yeah, there's a little screen. There's a little raven on the bottom, and then you can see the planetary pattern and different horizon possibilities that are inside the image.
I get the feeling of it. I can't see it with great clarity, but I definitely get the feeling of it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, as an example, her work with medicine art, it's an evolving process that's just been very beautiful to behold. And many, many people have this going on. I've been surprised with the artists I worked with in New Mexico, the beauty that's pouring in and being informed by something larger, like the larger personality, a larger wisdom, as you said.
Yes.
People are getting informed by that. And social acts of kindness, too, that are going on that are so touching. That there was one man on the internet, you may have seen it, who posted a visual of himself standing in New York City, blindfolded, and his little sign, handwritten. Did you see
him? Come and hug me, or I'd like to be hugged.
Exactly. I'm scared. I'm Islamic.
Poor.
And then you watch as the crowds do, the little, you know, human to human, people read it, he's blindfolded, and then they decide whether they want to reach out and touch him or not. And then all this, a tremendous amount of softening is going on. stopping. So
incredible.
I'm just listening to media.
Yeah, that was an incredible thing to witness. And, you know, if we look at that metaphorically, the you know, he was taking such a chance being essentially naked and open to whatever people would bring, which might have been violence, but in that circumstance, it wasn't.
Yes.
It was so, wow, what a mind-blowing idea. And to have the courage to do that, particularly in the context of all of the Islamophobia that's going on right now, mind-blowing.
Exactly.
It was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I'm so glad you brought that back to my memory. I'm so glad I saw it. And I think it was getting, I think the reason I saw it was getting a lot of play. People were saying, oh my goodness, they were sending it to their friends, and it was spreading across the planet.
I posted it on my Facebook page. I definitely posted it. When I went to Texas to give a talk there, it was the central feature was that man's capacity to stand so naked and find human to human, would people respond, and the sweetness. Isn't it just amazing? Well, hopefully viewers can see it.
Yeah, that's great.
So the creative acts, I think you're so right, the amount of creativity pouring in, and that is one beautiful creative human act.
Yeah.
So that's where we're called, and that would be everyone with their own bowl and their own wisdom and their own way of creating and generating something that's an offering to what's happening in the world. And so many responses of beauty that are pouring in, of humanity.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that your partner, Tom, who has a couple of boys, right? The boys.
Oh, yeah.
And that they had a couple of dreams that might be relevant here. So take us through that, if you will.
Great. Well, that would be a delight. Jake and Bennett are Tom's two sons, and they're my stepsons, and they're now 11 and 14. And when we were spending some time in Colorado over the holiday, they both, on the same night, woke up the next morning with dreams that were really, really touching. And it felt like dreams that are picking up these deeper themes of little human beings just coming into the world. And what will they be offering the world? What will they be giving the world, interestingly? So Jake, the 14-year-old, true to nature, very deep soul, he dreamt that he saw a giant tree. And the tree was opening, and a centaur was coming out of it.
Wow.
And then, isn't that amazing?
He's the Jungian father.
Totally. So the genes, completely. especially with this kid, no doubt. He's a future healer for certain. So he dreamt that the centaur is emerging from the tree, and out of the centaur is emerging a man. And the healing tone and the feeling in the dream just had an enormous beauty. And if we think about that mythically, and for Jake, it does show, you know, the new kids coming in are tuning in out of the world tree. You know, the centaur is a tremendous symbol that many people are going back to. I certainly am. Chiron is the wounded healer who is the centaur of Greek mythology, and we need the healing arts that get symbolized as the centaurs, meaning the human being that links to the animal body, that stays in with the animal body, and that we remember we're human animals, and links down the DNA ladder and stays linked to the animal world and plant world, to the natural world.
So
anyway, Jake is, you can feel the signature in him. He's emerging at 14, turning into a man who's connected to that mythology. And I look forward to seeing what many children will be doing with their lives as they're tuning into all those issues. Jake, I know it's going to be a healer. You can feel it in him. Bennett, on the other hand, he has a trickster prankster side that everybody catches. He's quite something that way. And his dream the same night was, but he somehow was tied to the discovery of the Fountain of Youth. and in the dream, some old man who was kind of crotchety lived inside a weird little structure. And this man and the crotchety structure were somehow also going to be tied to the story about the Fountain of Youth. And so suddenly, Bennett in the dream is watching the history of America unfold. He sees the Native American people. He sees Native American people's response to the invasion of the white people. He sees the Hispanic boats and all of that unfolding. And he sees him, his little self just floating along in the story on a boat. And then he's connected with how will the fountain of youth get itself worked out in connection with the structure and the old man. So the dream ends with that. And as a symbol, if we hear it symbolically, tremendous, because that's right where our culture sits. How will renewal and these old structures possibly strike up some new relationship? Mm-hmm. We know we've got a dying empire and we've got dying structures on our hands, the Democratic Party, many things of not being able to tolerate other in the shadow, so many things of needing to die. And how will we generate with renewal spirit some new structures in our world? Little Bennett, I think, has probably got a lot of career. He'll be adding to that somehow with his life. But I bet if people are tuning in, if your viewers are tuning in to their dreams and their children's dreams and each other, just to tune in and listen with symbolic ears, it's surprising how the depth of the mystery is just bubbling up right under us as we're mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. So I hoped our conversation would help kind of heighten people's curiosity to listen in where the symbolic world is speaking.
Yeah.
And trying to help heal, bring in the new. Let's try to bring in the new.
Yeah, and if we pull back, you know, as in Arrival, and you're saying you pull back far enough to be able to see the more of the whole, we have to believe that there's some kind of a cycle that we're in the midst of, and that destruction is necessary for the new to arise, and we may be going through a period of loss and destruction, but there is the hope for spring, for young people coming out with a freshness and a reinvention of what's needed for our time.
Yeah.
Or maybe not our time, but the time that is not so far off.
Yes, and exactly. And I think in the meanwhile, like our generations, what will happen too is being really called from a spiritual core to work our way through trauma, body, and fear to step into where wisdom comes in and to use this crack in ourselves and in our world and the crack between the worlds to bring some new illumination in while this is also happening, while tuning into the reality of what's up in the world. I think about Michael Diaz, a real gem, who's a therapist and Buddhist and artist in New Mexico in Santa Fe. He said this morning, beautiful image around really subtly, how do we welcome the shadow, open the door, and welcome otherness of color, otherness in all kinds of ways, not only in our country, but worldwide. How are we going to find where we welcome an encounter with the shadow that will be metabolizable and work? And where are we resisting, refusing, shutting down? And I think for all the people protesting coming up, there are, as we know, millions of people hitting the streets. And it's not Trump that people are necessarily protesting. It's really much deeper than that. It's a statement that the numbers standing up to speak something of what, speaking something to the horror of what is transpiring. That to stand up and do that as a welcoming gesture to otherness and to the shadow, not to fight against it, because that doesn't get us anywhere, but to instead have it be a statement for the dispossessed and for the stretch of opposites in this culture and in the world and the stretch of opposites the world's going through. If we're standing up to be part of a ritual about that, that makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think finding it's always, you know, it always gets back to if we can find the religious attitude, then we've got what realigns us. We've got where the new is coming in, when we can feel where that spiritual new attitude is coming in. So looking for where the new is coming in is a really good thing. And getting out of just fear and trauma and the bombardment from the collective and really significant capacity to act with compassion for every human being and all plants and animals. I mean, I'm sure, Dr. Dave, you really tuned in to this fact. It's so unbelievable that the environment wasn't even addressed at all during the whole of the election. How can that be?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Right.
So,
Well, I think you've given our listeners a good charge about developing an attitude that can help carry them through. And so I really appreciate that. I'm wondering if this might be a natural place for us to close off, or if there's something more that needs to be said.
This could be a pretty natural place to sign off. I guess it's that whole piece around looking for where the transcendent is, and how many times in history people have been with dying empires and difficult things, and that the mystic part of the human soul knows to keep reaching for where the transcendent is coming in, where humanity is also refining itself, not as a bypass from anything we're going through, but where humanity actually crystallized more of its beauty and its vulnerability and its temporariness at the same time as something so transcendent is reaching to commune with us. So I'm glad we had a chance to have this conversation today. And I guess maybe we could close with Yeats's lines. If I can remember them, it comes from, interestingly, his poem, The Valley of the Black Pig. And it goes something like, we who still labor by the cromlech on the shore and the great cairn on the hill, when the day sinks drowned in dew, growing weary of the world's empires, bow down to you, master of the still stars and of the flaming door.
Wow.
And I think that, isn't that potent? And that's quite a while ago we wrote it, and it's timeless, and it's for all people, where we're continually looking for that master of the still stars and the flaming door, where, and mistress of, where the psyche comes in and the cycloid comes in that does, in fact, help us touch something that's healing and transcendent throughout time, no matter what cycles of creation and destruction we're involved in. It's a both and.
Well, I think you're one of the portals, like a fountain, that this wisdom comes through. And so that's why I like having you so much on the show. So I want to thank you, Monica Whitman.
Thank you so much for giving me a moment to be with you and to be present to the prayer for the world as we're sitting with it today before the inauguration, and for all beings. Thank you, Dr. Day, very much.
I hope you were stimulated by this interview with Monica Whitman. Typically, I have prepared a lot of questions for my guest in advance. Because Monica was off on a ski vacation with her family up until pretty much the last minute, there just wasn't time to do that. Plus, we weren't playing off of a book, which is so often the case. So Monica was really wanting to have it be more conversational, with us interacting around some themes that she's been giving a lot of thought to, like most of us, I might add. Also, breaking my recent pattern, I wasn't able to provide a video for this interview. Not for lack of trying, I might add. We spent an hour trying to straighten out the technical problems we were experiencing. We were having audio problems with both Zoom and Skype. Finally, we went back to Zoom, which allows the guests to call in on a phone line as well as being on video. Because she was using a speakerphone, the audio quality is lower than on other recent interviews. And when I looked at the video recording after the interview, it showed a phone icon instead of her face for every time she spoke. I was really disappointed. This was really too bad because she's a very good-looking woman. We've never met in person, and my 5 previous interviews with her did not have video. So at least the attempt allowed us to see one another for the first time. She does have a book on Amazon.com, The Pregnant Darkness, Alchemy, and the Rebirth of Consciousness. And it's by Monica Whitman, that's spelled M-O-N-I-K-A, and Whitman is W-I-K-M-A-N. And her book is full of juicy Jungian goodness. And you can order it using the Amazon affiliate widget in our right-hand sidebar.
Dr. Dave is one of the most generous persons I know of. Every Thursday, I get spoiled with a new interview, which David has been working on all week, and for which he asks nothing in return but that we contemplate what his work is worth for us. So I did. and I realized I was hooked. A good measure of how much you value something is your reaction to your imagine it disappear. So I try to picture the day when shrink wrap radio doesn't exist anymore. And what I felt was sorrow, almost as if an old friend had passed away. So maybe you, like me, value the work of our dear old shrink more than you think. My response to that was a small donation. Was yours gonna be?
Thank you, Oscar, who a few years back set up a weekend dream workshop for me at the University of Stockholm. He was a faithful Shrink Wrap Radio listener both before and after that, and I consider him a friend. Unfortunately, there are no new donors to announce. If you're not already a regular supporter of Shrink Wrap Radio, won't you please answer Oscar's call to action? One of the things that makes Shrink Wrap Radio such a great value is that there are transcripts. And thanks to a select few passionate listeners who donate their time and energy in this way, I'm happy to announce the following two new transcripts. Number 527, Sex Addiction as Affect Dysregulation, with Alexandra Katahakis, thanks to listener volunteer Barclay Labrassure. And number 535, Maximizing Effectiveness in Dynamic Psychotherapy, with Patricia Coughlin, PhD, and that's thanks to listener volunteer Mike Wood. For those of you who are interested in purchasing my continuing education course offerings on the Zur Institute, I had previously announced that the 10% discount option was no longer available. Turns out I was wrong. The discount is available on my courses using the discount code DRDAVE88. That's DRDAVE88. And you'll find a link to the Zur Institute in the left-hand sidebar on shrinkwrapradio.com. Finally, let me wrap up this segment of the show by reminding you to go to our website and look at the list of books by some of our past guests. You can click on the book covers there to order directly from Amazon.com. Let's reward these guests for choosing to advertise on our website. The most recent edition is Dr. Tony Rumenier's book on deliberate practice, which I think is destined to be a classic.
Hi, this is New Mexico Jungian analyst Dr. Monica Wickman, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Monica Wickman, whom we heard from earlier as today's guest. I'm going to skip the reading of listener emails today. So, as always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And remember that in addition to emails, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. And you can leave voicemail on our phone at 415-830-4014. Thanks again to today's guest, Jungian analyst Monica Wickman, for helping us to use our dreams, values, and intuition to orient during these hard times. My next guest will be Sergei Baranov, who has written a book about his remarkable shamanic quest, which is titled The Path. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.